Today we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, Shlosh Nashim Sheyu Yishenot B'mita Achat. Three women are sleeping in a single bed. V'nimtza Dam Tachat Ha'emtzait. If you find blood or stain under the woman who's in the middle, Kulan Tmeot, then all the women are affected by it. Tachat Ha'pnimit, they find Dam under the woman who's the most inner of the three women, assuming here that the bed is up against the wall, adjacent to the wall, and there's a ladder on the opposite side which you can climb to get onto the bed. So now you get onto the bed, the pnimit is the one closest to the wall. If she has dam under her, shtaima pnimiot tmeot. She and the middle woman are tmeot. The chitzona tehora. The woman towards the outer side is tehora. Takada chitzona. If you find dam on the woman's towards the outside, meaning the furthest away from the wall, then a shtaima chitzonot tmeot. And the two outer women, meaning the outermost woman and the middle woman, are tmeot, v'apnimit tehora. And the one who's closest to the wall is tehora. Ematai, when is this true? Bizman shavru derech margalot ha'mita. That's if they ascended to the bed from the foot of the bed. So they're able to climb onto the bed independent of each other. They don't have to go from the side, which is not adjacent to the wall. If there's a ladder on that side, then everybody has to go up that side to the bunk bed or to the bed. And then has to cross over to get closer to the wall. If you can enter the bed from the foot of the bed, then each one can climb on independently to their place on the bed without crossing over the other individual's place. Avali mabru derech aliyah. If they go up to the bed through the outside towards the inside of the wall, then kulan tmeot. And they're all tmeot because the woman who's on the innermost side to the wall had to cross the other two spaces before she got to the inside. Now if we find dam under the outermost woman, it's not necessarily indicative of the fact that it came from her or the woman adjacent to her. It could even be from the woman who's closest to the wall because she crossed over that area to get to her location on the bed. Now obviously this is in contrast or contradiction to the previous Mishnah, and the Gemara will deal with that right away. Badka achat mehen nimtzei tehora. After they find this stain on the bed, and now the women are considered tmeot, let's say it was under the middle woman, and then one of the women checks herself and finds herself tehora. He tehora, ushtaim tmeot. She's considered not to have a problem here, whereas the other two women are considered to be tmeot. But kushtaim, if two of the women did a check, umatsu tehorot, and they find themselves both not having a discharge, hein tehorot, ushlishit tmeah. They are considered tehorot, and the third woman is now assigned the liability of the dam that's found on the bed, and we consider her to be the nida. Shloshtan, if all three of them check, umatsu teorot, and find themselves teorot, kulan tmeot. Then we go back to the original standing that they're all tmeot, because there's no reason to assign the liability to any one of the women over the other women. If the women check one or two of them, then the liability is assigned to the remaining women who didn't do the check, because in all likelihood it came from them. Once all of them have checked, and now you've identified the fact that none of them have a discharge of dam, then we have to assume that it came from one of them, and there's no one that's better than the other to assign that liability to, and therefore we assume that they all are tmeot, like the original situation or status that they had before they began checking. Lema davar domeh, what is this similar to? Gal tameh, you have a pile of stones that has tuma that is found under it. Shinitare ben shnei galim teorim. That is amongst other piles that are not problematic, that don't have tumata mate under them. So you have three piles of stones. Under one of those three piles of stones, there was tumata mate, but we don't know which of the three. Ubadku achat mehem umatso tahor. They checked one of those piles, and they find nothing underneath it. They don't find in tumata mate. Hu tahor ushnaim tmeim. At this point, we assume that pile of stones, that area is considered to be tahor. The tuma, then we assume, is in one of the other two piles, and they will remain tmeim. Shnaim, umatsu torim. If he checks two of the piles and finds no tuma tmeit, then hein teorim. We assume that those two piles are fine now, or that area is fine. Vushlishi tmeit. The third one, we assume, now has the tuma under it. You've guessed right. You got the two that were tahorim now cleaned up, and you see there's no tumata mate, we're going to assume that the tumata mate is found in the third pile. Shloshtan, umatsu tehorim, if you check all three of them, and then find them tehorim, kulan tmeim. Then we're back to the original stand, because the tuma was under one of those three piles. You check all three piles, and you don't find any tuma, then obviously there's a problem here. And once again, we reset to the original status, which is all three piles are Tmeim, Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Devar Shu Becheskat Tuma, anything that has a chazoka of having Tuma, Lo'olam Behu Tumato, Adshi Vadalaka Tuma Heichanu. We assume the Tuma is there, until you can identify positively that the Tuma is found in a particular location, and then you can dismiss the status of Tuma with regards to the other locations. Chamim Omrim, Bodei Gatshi Magila Sela Olam Tula. Chamim go that you check until you reach bedrock or until you reach virgin soil. Once you've done that and you don't find anything, you've cleared it up. So the question is, do you need negative affirmation or positive affirmation? According to the Chachamim, you just need negative affirmation, which means as long as you don't find anything there and you've checked appropriately, then there's no more Tuma. Even though there was supposedly Tuma under one of these three piles and it was known that there was Tuma under one of these three piles, once you've done a check sufficiently and there's nothing there, that negative affirmation means that whatever is here is now tahor, and we'll have to figure out or ascribe the missing Tuma to some sort of event, which the Gemara will do, that took it away. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir requires positive affirmation, which is until you find the Tuma, everything is considered to be tameh. You need to identify that Tuma, find that Tuma. Once you have, then you can isolate the problem to that location. But until you do, we're going to assume the Tuma is still here, despite the fact that we don't find anything at this moment. Maishna Resha Delo Maflik, Maishna Seifa Deka Maflik. Gemara is asking the question, which obviously comes up from reading the last two Mishnayot. The previous Mishnah says that if you have three women in a bed, and then you find a stain on the bed, they're all Tmeim. We don't differentiate between where they are on the bed. We assume that no matter where the stain is, all three of them are assigned that liability, and they're considered to be Nidot. Yet in our Mishnah, we differentiate between where the placement of the stain is as to which women are considered to be Tmeim. So then, what's the difference between that Mishnah prior to the Mishnah that we just read over here? Amar Rabbi Yami b'mishulavot. Rashi reads b'mishulavot as meaning tkufot u'dvukot yachad. That in the previous Mishnah, in the Resha, the assumption was that they were entangled, they were on top of each other, close together, whatever you want to say, that meant that there was a lot of overlapping between the women. Therefore, we can't differentiate between which of the three women is Tmeah and which one is Torah, because they were just too proximate to each other, or they were too intertwined with each other. On the other hand, in our Mishnah, where the women have plenty of space, there's separation, then we start to differentiate about placement of where you find the stain. So that's Rashi's explanation. Rashi seems to associate it with the Resha. Rashi has the Girsa of Amar Rabbi Yami, Resha b'mishulavot. That Rashi actually has it as part of his Girsa, that the Gemara is explaining the reason for the Reshas being mitamei, all of the women. If you look in the Baal HaTosafot, he's not convinced that that's the right way to read this solution of the Gemara, because he says that in Harvei Svarim, Lo Garcinan Beresha. We actually don't have it in our Girsa either. He says many Gemarot did not have the solution of Rabbi Ami associated with the Resha. And absent the word Resha, the Re says he would have explained the Gemara just the opposite. That this is an explanation for the Seifa. And that Mishulavot means Mikuvanot. Mishulavot doesn't mean Shiluv, intertwined, or entangled. Rather that they had, each one had their own place. Not that they were overlapping. And B'Perish Rabbeinu Chananon Katuv, the Mishalche Shalchufe. He translates this as Mishalche Shalchufe, which means that mit pardot zomizo, that they're separated from each other. Rashi, because of the Girsa of Resha, as well as what you would have thought the word Mishulav means to be intertwined or entangled, he explains that as being the reason why the Resha makes them all Tmeim. The Baal HaTosafot that don't have the word Resha necessarily in their Girsa, and feel like the Gemara here, Mishulavot, means not, like we're saying, intertwined or intermingled, but rather Mikuvanot, independent, and that's the way that Rabbeinu Chananel seems to explain this Gemara, that then it's an explanation for the Seifa, as to why the women in Seifa are not all Tmeot, when you find the Dam under the Pnimit or the Chitzona. Right, Batka Achat. Lama le lemitne lema ze domeh. Why does the Mishnah have to bring an example to corroborate the situation with the Nida? It's pretty obvious what they're saying about the Nida. It's understandable. Why do you have to add in this extra section about the nida is similar to the gal avanim. So hachi kamar luhu Rabbi Meir the Rabbonin. We're missing some of the background to why the Mishnah was designed in that way, because Rabbi Meir is actually challenging the Rabbonin. Maishna bidam delo paligdu. Why don't you argue by the case of dam? Maishna bigal de paligdu. And then what is different about the gal avanim where you do argue? You see in our Mishnah, when you checked all three women, the Mishnah says then they all become tmeot again after they found themselves to Orim. Whereas by the Galim, if you checked all of the piles and then found no Tumah, then the Chachamim said, Tahor, there's no problem anymore. So what Rabbi Meir is challenging the Chachamim about and why he brought this down as a similar indication is to say, why is it that you argue with me with the Galavanim and you don't argue with me with regards to the women, the three women? Rabbanan explained, simple, Bishlama hotam ema urev natla. In the case of Tumata mate, the fact is that a raven could have come and taken the Tumata mate away. There are reasons why you might have dug up the galim and not found a Tumata mate anymore. Tumata mate is not static. First of all, it decomposes. Number two is that it could be ferreted out by animals and it could have been eaten. So the fact that you didn't find Tumata mate there is not an indication that it still is here. That's why the Chachamim over there only required negative affirmation, not positive affirmation. Elohocha, hai dam mehechata. Over here, there's no other way to explain where the dam came from. It's one of the women that contributed the dam that's found here, and therefore we have to assign that liability to one of the women, or to all of the women. And therefore here we need positive affirmation, which means that until we are certain that one of the women is the one who's citing the dam, then all of them are going to be considered as if they're citing the dam. So had they done a check and one of the women was found to be already discharging dam as she was in nida, then we would assign the liability to that woman because she's already tameah. And then we could assume the other two women are tohurim. But absent that positive affirmation, just because you find that none of the women are citing, that's not enough of a reason to dismiss the dam, because you still have to explain how the dam got there. Absent an explanation, we have to assign that liability to someone, and where we have no one party that's more liable than the other, then we're going to assign that liability to all three of the women. Tanya, Amar, Rabbi Meir, Maseh b'shikma, shel Kfar Saba. There was an incident with the sycamore in Kfar Saba, shayu machzikim ba tum'ah, that the people had a mesora that there was tum'ah under this tree. Ubadku v'lo matzo. They checked. They dug up around the tree, and they couldn't find any tumah, so they wanted to clear it of tumah. Le'yamim nishba bo aruach. At some point, there was a strong wind, ve'akarto, and it flipped the tree over, uprooted the tree from its location. Nimsa gulgolet shomate chuvalo bi'karo. And then they found a skull of a mate that was stuck in the trunk of the tree, or the base of the tree. So you see here that despite the fact that you checked, you can't rely on the check. Or in essence, that's what Rabbi Meir said in the Mishnah, you need positive affirmation of the Tumah, because look, when you get negative affirmation, sometimes it doesn't work, because they thought they had cleared it out, they thought there was no Tumah, and sure enough, they found it. Amulo, Misham Raya, you can't bring a proof from there. Imar lo bat kukol tzorko. You can't trust the check. Who knows? The fact that they didn't find it means that they just didn't check well enough. Had they checked properly, they would have found it. Tanya Rabbi Yossi Maseh b'me'ara shel Shichin sheyu machzikin bat me'ah. There was this cave in Shichin where they used to assume there was tumata mate there. But gu'at shegil karko cheta chalaka ketziporin. They dug down to the point of earth where it was smooth like a nail, meaning that it was virgin earth. Malo matzo, and they didn't find the tumata mate. The yamim nichnesu ba poalim. Some point, some workers were taking shelter in this cave, because it was raining outside. And they stuck their spades into the ground. You know, they implanted them there to stay while they were in the cave. And all of a sudden they landed into a huge casing that was full of bones, meaning that they found the tumah that had supposedly been there that wasn't found in that previous check. Amrulo, Visham Raya. Again, the Chachamim say, you can't bring proof from there. Emar lo badko kol tzorcho. let's assume that they didn't check it properly. Again, the fact that they didn't find it is not evidence of the fact that checking doesn't work. It's evidence of the fact that the people checking aren't doing a good job checking, but had they done a good job checking, they would have found it. Tanya, Abba Sholomer, Masev Sela Beit Choron, there was an incident by the bedrock or a name of location in Beit Choron. Shemachzikin ba tum'ah, they used to assume again that there was tum'ah there. V'lo yachlu chachamim libdok, and the chachamim had no way to check it. Mimnei shaita miruba, field or the area was way too big, and therefore they couldn't isolate where the tum'ah was. So because of that, nobody could walk in that entire area because they could never figure out where exactly the tum'ah was. V'yasham zaken echad. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya Shemo, there was one elder there, and we identify him as Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. Amar lehen, Eviolo Sadinim, bring me sheets. Eviolo Sadinim, they brought him large sheets. Bisharan Bamaim, he soaked them in water. Uparsan alehen, he then spread it out all over the fields. Makom Tahara Yavish, in the area where it was dry, it was Tahor. Makom Tuma Lach, in the area where it was Tameh, it was wet. Ubadko matsu borgado maleatzamot. And that's exactly what they did. They followed this pattern, and based on that pattern, they dug up those areas, and sure enough, they found this huge cistern full of bones, and they were able to identify positively where the tumah was in the field. Now, as far as the test is concerned, the test works because the assumption is that wherever there was earth that was already dug up or loosened up, it had room to absorb the water from the sheets. Areas which had never been dug up or never utilized were much more compacted and solid, and therefore they would not absorb the water. So the Balei Tosafot note a different girsa that actually flips the Yavesh and Lach. And the only question is, are you speaking about the sheet or are you speaking about the land? In our case over here, it says that the Makom Tara Yavesh, in the area that was Tahor, was Yavesh, means the earth itself was Yavesh, because it could not absorb the water from the sheets. And the Makom Tuma was Lach, the earth that was in that area was wet or moist because it absorbed the water from the sheets because it was porous because it had been dug up already or had been utilized already. The Tosafot, who has the opposite gear, so speaking about the sheet itself. So on the sheet itself, if the water remained in the sheet, that's an indication that that area is Tahor because it wasn't absorbed by the ground. And the areas where the sheets were dry, that's an indication of Tuma, because that water got absorbed into the ground, and that's why the ground was wet. So no matter which girsa you have, it's either focusing on the sheet or the earth, but the idea being that wherever the earth was used was already porous, and that absorbs the water from the sheet. Tana. So now, what was this cistern that they found full of bones? Huabor Shimilei Ishmael ben Netanya Chalalim. That is the cistern that was filled by bones that Ishmael ben Netanya, when he went on his killing spree, killing those that were supportive of the Babylonians installing a new Jewish ruler or king after the Churban HaBayit, so in his rebellion against this acceptance of the Babylonian rule, he went ahead and he killed a large number of people. Dichtiv, and it says there, Vabor, asher yishlich sham Ishmael, it's called Pigrei Anashim, asher hika, biyad Gedalia. It says there is the boar, the cistern, where Ishmael disposed of all these bodies that he had killed, Asher Yikabi Ad Gedalia, that were killed by Gedalia ben Achikam. And the Gemara says, V'chi Gedalia Hargan? Wait a minute, Gedalia didn't kill these people. Gedalia was actually the victim of this killing spree because he was assassinated. Follow Ishmael Hargan. Ishmael was the one who killed him, not Gedalia. So why is the Torah assigning the culpability to Gedalia? El mitok she'elo lachush, Batzat Yochanan ben Kerach, Velochash, because he did not listen to the advice of Yochanan ben Kerach and didn't pay heed to it, Malei Alav HaKatuv Ki'ilu Hargan. He was given then responsibility as if he killed them, somewhat akin to the Egla Arufa, whereby the elders of the city are held accountable for the death of this individual, even though they obviously did not kill him, but they are responsible for the behavior of the city or the fact that the city didn't, as the Midrashim say, give lodging to this individual or sent them off in a way that was dangerous, didn't take care of him. So the elders of the city are held accountable. So too over here, Gedalia ben Achikam had nothing to do with the killing, but he's held responsible because he's the one who could have prevented it. He's the one that could have stopped it because he was told by Yochanan ben Kerach that there was an insurgence that was building and that there was going to be a coup d'etat and they were going to kill him. because they were upset about the fact that he had accepted the Babylonian rule and had been installed as the leader of the people under the auspices of the Babylonians. And so Yochanan ben Kerach tells him that Ishmael ben Netanyah is planning to kill you or to rebel against this leadership. But he didn't want to accept it because he didn't want to accept Lashon Hara. He didn't believe it. So Amar Rava, Hai Lishna Bisha, when it comes to Lashon Hara, Afal pi d'lekubei lo mibaye, you're not allowed to accept Lashon Hara. You're not allowed to listen to Lashon Hara and take it as factual. Michesh lo mibaye. But you do have to be suspicious. You do have to take into account that it might possibly be right. So when you hear Lashon Hara, you can't dismiss it just because it's Lashon Hara. What you have to do is mitigate the standing that it has. You can be suspicious. You have to take precautions for it. But what you can't do is accept it as if it is the truth. Here, in this case, that's exactly what Gedaliah ben Achikam didn't do. He heard this. He assumed it was Lashon Hara and he dismissed it completely. What he should have done was be suspicious of the fact that maybe there's some truth to what's being said. Can't accept it as fact. He can't just be mekabel it, but at least he should have checked out the matter and seen whether there was risk coming up, and then he could have prevented the killing of all these people because he would have known or been aware of the fact that Ishmael ben Netanyah was leading this insurrection, and then he could have prevented the whole problem. So therefore, he's assigned culpability because of the fact that he just dismissed it out of hand and didn't take the proper precautions. Hanu b'nei Galila, d'nafak alayu kala, d'katil nafsha. There was these rumors circulating that these individuals up in the north, and the truth is that the majority of the Jewish settlement at that time was already up in the Galil, post the Korban HaBayit, Yehuda is pretty desolate, and most of the Jewish settlement is up in the Galil, and we know that from where the Tanaim are found. Most of the Tanaim are found up in the north, and we know even the Amoraim later on are found in the north. Much of the excavations that were done, where they found shuls, they found Bate Midrashot, were found up in the north, with names of Tanaim associated with them. You can see that up in the museum in Kesaria, where they display a lot of the findings that they had, things like Beit Midrash of Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. So here, the Jewish settlement in the Galil, there are rumors circulating that two individuals there were murderers. And the government is obviously chasing them down because they want to penalize, or they want to try these individuals. Atu l'kamei de Rabbi Tarfon, these two individuals appear before Rabbi Tarfon Amrulei, the Tamrinan Mar. Please hide us. Secret us away so that the authorities don't come and take us away. Amar Lahu, hey chinavid. I don't know what to do here. Ilo atarminchu, chazu yutaychu. If I don't hide you, if I don't secret you away, then the Roman authorities are going to come and take you away. They're going to see you and they're going to kill you. Atarminchu, if I do hide you and I then aid and abet you, Hamurabonon, ha lishna bisha, afagav de kibule lo mi baye, michushle mi boy. I can't accept the Lashon Hara or the rumors that are circulating, but at least I have to be suspicious of them. Now if I hide you, I'm going to be considered an accessory to the crime, and the Romans are going to penalize me. They're going to kill me for hiding these fugitives that are running away from the government. So I can't be an active participant in this because I don't necessarily know if you killed or not. But I at least have to be cautious about this. I have to take it to heart that maybe there's something wrong here. Zilu atun tamru nafshaihu. He says, you know what? You guys go hide yourselves. I won't be involved. I won't look. You guys do whatever you need to do to go hide. And then that way I won't be personally responsible for you. But again, I also won't be responsible for the fact that you're exposed to the government authorities because I don't know which way to go here. I don't know if it's true or not true. And therefore, I got to let you take care of the situation yourself. Shem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't be fearful of Og Melech HaBashan, that I'm going to help you in the battle, and you are going to be successful in this battle. Michte, Sichon v'Og, Achei Habu. Sichon and Og were brothers. Damar Mar, because we have a Mesorah, Sichon v'Og, Nei Achia, Barsham Chazai Habu. That Sichon and Og were the children of Achia, who was the child of Sham Chazai. Shem Chazai, as Rashi notes over here, is a reference to Malachim that came down at the early time of creation, at the end of Parshat Bereshit, where it describes that the Bnei Elohim got married or took the Bnot Adam. Over there, the Medrash says that the Bnei Elohim over there were Malachim that came down, And there are many midrashim discussing exactly what was the scenario. Their names also change in the midrashim, and over here, they're all different variations of what you see here of Shem Chazai. Rashi quotes it as Shem Chazai and Azael, and the Gemara in Yoma associates it with Azazel. The Seir Azazel is associated with these individuals as well in the Midrash. So these are the Bnei Elohim that come down and marry the Bnot Adam. Now these Bnei Elohim obviously are Malachim, which they are like superhumans because of the fact that they were Malachim that were brought down to earth. And then when they get married to quote unquote the Bnot Adam, they produce the children which the Torah calls the Gdolei Aretz. They were these giants, these bigger than life people. And so then that child that was produced from that marriage was Achia. And then he had two sons which were Sichon and Og. So that's why they're known as the giants, because they are a product of those unions between the Bnei Elohim and the Bnot Adam. Maishna me Og dekamistape. Maishna me Sichon deloka mistape. Why was it that Moshe Rabbeinu was only afraid of Og and not afraid of Sichon? If they're brothers, they're both huge. They're both formidable enemies. Why was it that Moshe only feared Og and didn't fear Sichon? I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Again, Rabbi Yochanan never saw Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So in all likelihood, it should be I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishum, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Which means Rabbi Yochanan saying it over what he heard in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Not that he heard it from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Mich tshuvato shel to tzadik. From Moshe's statement, atayudea maya bilibo. Now you know what he was thinking. The fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu answers Moshe Rabbeinu al tira, that means Moshe Rabbeinu was fearful. Oh, God would only have to calm him down or to relieve his anxiety if he believed that Moshe was fearful. So it must have been that Moshe was afraid. Amar shimer tamod lo zchut shel Avraham Avinu. He was worried about Og Melech HaBashan with the zchut of Avraham Avinu that would have protected him. Shenemar, because it says here, vayavo apalit, vayaget Avraham ha'ivri. The escapee, the refugee, came and told Avraham ha'ivri. This is in the battle between the five kings and the four kings, where the four kings take over the area of Sdom v'Amorah, and they carry off Lot and all the possessions into captivity. Vayavo apalit is someone who escaped from that battle, or being taken into captivity, and comes to tell Avraham that his nephew Lot has been taken captive and that he needs to do something about it. Why was he called a palit? Because he survived the Dor HaMabul. The palit there was identified as Og Melech HaBashan. And that is because, as the Midrash says, he was palit min HaMabul. He survived the Mabul. And the truth is that, as Tosafot points out, that it must have been his brother also survived the Mabul. That Og and Sichon must have survived the Mabul. So how does the Midrash know that the Palit is Og and not Sichon? Because the Midrash says the Palit is not that he escaped from the battle or the captivity of the four kings, but rather that they escaped the Mabul by moving to Eretz Yisrael, to the high place, and since they were giants or big, they were able to survive the Mabul. They hung on to the side of the Teva, all the Midrashim that are involved with that. Question is, why is the word Palit only associated with Og and not with Sichon? That Tosafot says, again, it must be that Moshe was fearful. The fact that Moshe was fearful, that already indicates that which of the two brothers was the Palit. They both could have been the Palit. But why was it Og? Because Moshe is only identified as being fearful with regards to Og, not with regards to Sichon. And now, why is this Gemara brought here? What does this have to do with our Gemara at all? So Tosafot claims it has to do with the Lishna Bisha. It has to do with the Lashon Hara. So Gemara said before, even though you don't listen to Lashon Hara, you do have to be cautious about it. You have to be suspicious about it. So this is a similar idea over here, because Og came with ulterior motives. The Midrash claims that Og came and tried to instigate Avram into engaging in battle with the four kings. That way he would be killed and Og would be able to marry Sarah. So Og was coming to do this for ulterior motives. So even though Og had ulterior motives when he came to disclose the information to Avraham, nevertheless, Moshe was fearful that he may still get credit for it. Just like by Lishna Bisha, when someone tells you Lishna Bisha, Lashon Hara, you don't listen to it, but you have to be suspicious of it. So to over here, someone who performs a mitzvah with an ulterior motive, maybe he doesn't get the mitzvah, maybe you don't have to worry about it, but at least you have to be cautious. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. He was afraid that maybe that schut for Og Melech HaBashan would stand up for him and then help him to defeat Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's when Hashem responds to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, al tira, don't be afraid, you have enough schuyot, or whatever Og did was not sufficient grounds to protect him, and you will be able to defeat him. Tanrabanan, beged she'avad bo keta. You have a beged that had a stain in it, and we're assuming here it's a menstrual stain, and then he wants to get rid of it, but he doesn't know where it is. So it's similar to the case of our Mishnah, where you have a stain, we don't know who to assign it to, or you have a gal that has tuma under it, and we don't know where the tuma is. So it's over here. You have a ketem in a beged, and you don't know where in the beged the ketem is found. Mavira lav shivas mamanim umevatlo. You use these 7 detergents that will cleanse the beged, and that will be mevatel it. That will wipe it out. That will eliminate it from the beged. Now, the Gemara is referencing to what we will see later on, that there is a laundering process that the Gemara indicates will take out any stain or will remove things that are not dyed really well or don't have dye that takes well. And so therefore this process of cleansing was used to rid begadim of either problematic dyes or to get rid of things like a ketem, like a stain there to ensure that it's not there. Tosafot says, why do you need to do this? Because by definition, if you're mevatel it, it no longer has significance and it won't be causing any tuma anymore. And that is because if the individual can't find it, then obviously they don't care about it anymore and they would be mevatel it. So if that's the case, why do you need to launder it in order for it to be mevutal? So Tosafot says that even after you can't find it in the beged, the person always has in the back of their mind, I remember there was a stain here, I can't find it now, but maybe it'll appear later. And since they would appear later, they're still makpid on it. If they're makpid on it, then it is a problem. Because in issues of tuman tahara, when you're makpid on something, like for instance going to the mikveh, it will cause a chatzitza if you have something on your body, dirt or something on the body that you're makpid on, it's chutzeitz. And if you're makpid on it, it also does not eliminate the tuma that's associated with this item. Therefore, we have a problem here until it's mivutal. Once you've laundered it with these 7 detergents, then you're certain that it's not there anymore, because if it was there, it's been wiped out, and then it's mivutal. Shimon Lazar Amar, Rabbi Shimon Lazar says, bodko shkunot shkunot. You have to check it section by section. And Rashi says over here, shkunot shkunot means ko shalosh v'shalosh etzbaot levad. To do 3 finger breaths by 3 finger breaths, you have to check the beged, and you have to do a very intense checking of the beged to see if the ketem's there, to eliminate the possibility that there is some ketem that is found here. Now, from the way that the Gemara writes it, and those of us points this out, it sounds like if you do this check, then you don't find anything, it would be tahor. Wait a minute. Didn't we just say before that according to Rabbi Meir, that unless you have positive affirmation, then you can't eliminate that possibility? And over here, it sounds like if you don't find the ketem, then it's eliminated. Okay, you'll say that's Rabbi Meir's opinion. But we saw before that the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Meir when it comes to Dam or Ketem. They didn't agree by Tumah because there's a reason why it could have disappeared. But by Dam, they did agree with him. And therefore here by Dam, why is it that we assume if you do this check that they beg it would be Tahor? He says, Yishlamar Dahocha Nami Dami Legal. This case over here is similar to the case of the Gal. It's not like the Ketem on the bed where the blood's there and you have to assume it came from someone because otherwise how did it get there? It's more like the case of the gal where the Mtuat HaMeit could have been ferreted out by an animal or taken off by a raven, and that's why it's not there. Similarly over here, if you have a ketem in a beged, say maybe it disappeared by itself, it faded by itself, or it was laundered or got soaked in water somehow, and he wasn't aware of it. So therefore, there are reasons to believe over here that the ketem disappeared, even though it once existed here and you can't identify it anymore. And he says, maybe even Rabbi Meir would agree over here. Because in the case of a raven coming and taking away the Tumat HaMeit, that's less likely or less common scenario. So Rabbi Meir dismisses that. But over here, where it's very common for a stain to disappear over time, to fade over time, or to be washed away somehow, then maybe even Rabbi Meir would agree here that if you do this check, it would be sufficient. Avda bo shichvat zera. If you had a beged that had shechvat zera in it, and it needs to be laundered in order to remove the shechvat zera so it's no longer tamei, if it's chadash, budko memachat, so if you have a newer beged, you check it with a needle. As Rashi says over here, you run the needle over it, because the area where the shikva zera dried is going to be crusty or hard. And therefore, when you run a needle over it, it will catch in those areas. And that's how you'll be able to identify where the shikva zera is. Shachuk bodko bechama. If it's a beggar that's already been well worn and is thinner, bodko bechama. You hold it up to the sun. And wherever the sun comes through, you know there's no shikva zera. Wherever the sun doesn't come through, you know there is some sort of stain of shikva zera there. As Rashi notes, you can't use that check for the newer begadim because the newer begadim are too thick. And therefore the sun won't go through any of the areas because it's so thick, not because there's shikva zera there. Tana. And then we have a Tanaic work which identifies what Rashi told us was true by both Koshkunot Shkunot, that the area of a Shkuna is going to be 3x3 etzbaot, which is the minimum size of a beged that can be mikabel tuma. So that's considered to be a shiur of something that is de minimis. And therefore, if you check in a methodical way by that size, then we assume that you've done a complete and thorough check. If you can't find it, the beged will be tor. Terabanan. Beged she'avad bo kilayim. You have a beged that kilayim got lost in it. Meaning that it's a wool beged, and there was one thread of linen that was in there, but you can't find that thread of linen. Arizeh lo'im keren lo'ved kuchavim. You may not sell it to a non-Jew. Lo yasenu madat lechamor. And you also may not use it for a saddle blanket or throw on the donkey. But you are allowed to make it into clothing for the mate. Over here, the Gemara is dealing with issues of kilayim and the restrictions of kilayim. The Baalei HaTosafot over here explain that there are different issues with regards to kilayim. One issue with kilayim is that you're only asur, or it's only problematic if you wear it, or you're malet, or you put it on yourself. And you have to wear it or wrap yourself in it somehow in order to be an isur kilayim. There's no isur kilayim if it's just under you, it's sitting under you. Or if you're just sitting on the kilayim, or the kilayim is used in such a manner that you're not getting hana'ah of levusha or halah on your body. So for that reason, kilayim has certain dispensations where you'd be able to use it. So for instance, in this case, the mardat, the saddle, you should have been able to use it for a saddle, but we don't allow you to use it for a saddle, even though people don't take the saddle and then wear it after they use the saddle blanket. They don't wear it on themselves, or they don't put it on themselves. But nevertheless, the Mishnayot in Kilayim say, we don't allow you to do this because you are in direct contact with the item. So since you are in direct contact with the item, we worry about a folding of the item or a piece of the item onto your body. And then there'll be incidental wearing or incidental halah that we don't want. So if you're in direct contact with the item, even though you're not using it in a derech levisha or derech halah, we won't let you do it if it can fold over or come on you because it's in direct contact with your body. If there's something between you and the item, then you can have kilayim under you. You can use the kilayim in that way. That's one thing Tosafot points out. Now, the Rabbanan were gozer unto wearing it or hala'a, which means that if it's an item that can be used as a beged or can be put on your body, doesn't matter how many layers you have there, we won't let you use it because we're afraid that you may then appropriate it to be used in a way that's levisha or hala'a. So if you have this blanket and you're sitting on top of 10 other blankets, so you're not in contact with it, you don't have no hala'a, you have no levisha, we still won't let you use it because a guy could come along, pull out the bottom blanket and then wrap it around himself and use it in that way. So those are the two gzeirot chachamim with regards to kilayim. One is if it's kilayim that doesn't usually, is not usually worn or put on you, if you are in direct contact with it, you still can't use it because we're afraid it'll flip over or roll over onto you. But if there's some separation between you and the item, you can utilize it. If it's something that people wear or wrap themselves up in, even if it's under multiple layers, we won't let you do it because at some point you might appropriate it to use it in that way and you're going to forget that there's kilayim and you're going to use it and wear kilayim. So that's the problem with the mardat. The mardat, even though people don't wear it, we are afraid that they're in direct contact with it and they're sitting on it directly, which is impermissible. That's why you can't use it as a mardat chamor. You can't sell it to a non-Jew because of the fact that we're afraid that a Jew will then come buy the clothing from the non-Jew and he won't know that there's kilayim there. They'll go and say, I bought it from this other Jew. So you'll say, oh, you bought it from that Jew. Must be there wasn't any kilayim. and then he's going to buy it from this non-Jew. So the problem is that that will be in circulation now, this Kilayim Beget, and therefore you can't let something that is Kilayim, but unidentifiable as Kilayim, to go into the hands of a Kuchavim, who'll sell it back to a Jew. Obviously, from all this, if the Kilayim is visible or noticeable and obvious, then there's no Easter to sell it to a Nachri, because then any Jew buying it from the Nachri will know that there is Kilayim in it, and then won't buy it, because the problem is evident and obvious. What you can do with it is use it for tachrichim lemate. You can't use it for a mate, because matim are not chayavim in mitzvot. Since they're not chayavim in mitzvot, you can put kilayim on a mate, and it's not a problem. And we're not worried about you appropriating it for something else, because the tachrichim become a mate, become a surim ba'ana'a, or it's not acceptable to take the tachrichim shel mate, so nobody's going to utilize them anyway. What Rabbi Yosef then draws as a conclusion from this is, I'm Rabbi Yosef, zot amerit mitzvot b'telot, latid lavo. That makes it sound like there are no mitzvot in the future. Because when this individual wakes up for tchiyat ha-meitim, he's going to be wearing kilayim. So the only way that we could bury him in kilayim is if we assume there's no going to be no mitzvot, latid lavo. I'm Rabbi Abaye, v'itei ma-Rabbi Dimi. So Abaye is Tamid, said back to him, or Rabbi Dimi. V'ama Rabbi Mani, I'm Rabbi Yanai. Lo shanu elo l'safdo. You can only put them in the tachrichim to do the eulogy, but you cannot bury him in these items. So that would dismiss what you're saying, because they're actually worried about the fact that burying him would then result in him wearing it. It could be a temporary beged, it cannot be a permanent beged. Amarlei, Rabbi Yosef says back, lavit marala. Don't we have a qualification of that? Amar Rabbi Yochanan afilu kovro. The Rabbi Yochanan says that's not true. You can even bury him in it. And for Rabbi Yochanan, the Ta'ameh, Rabbi Yochanan, the Shitato. Dam Rabbi Yochanan, Mai Tichti B'Meitim Chufshi. What does it mean in Tehillim when it says that the Meitim will be free? Kevan Shemeit Adam Nase Chufshi Min HaMitzvot. Once a person dies, they are now independent of the mitzvot. They are now freed of the obligation of the mitzvot. Obviously, that has a positive and a negative side to it. The positive side is if you put Tehillim on it, it doesn't matter. On the other hand, there's a negative side to it, which is what we say all the time, that once a person dies, you can't do any more mitzvot. You can't accumulate any more credits at that point in time. So you're now chufshi min ha-mitzvot. And so Rabbi Yochanan the Shitate says you can even bury the mate in a kilayim because he's chufshi min ha-mitzvot. He's no longer obligated in the mitzvot, and it's not an issue for him. So now this leads to a double-edged sword with regards to meitim. So over here you have an attitude of Rabbi Yochanan, who's stating that the Meitim are chofshim in a mitzvot, Meitim are independent of mitzvot, they are no longer obligated in mitzvot, which means that you could do whatever you want with them in terms of interacting with them, in terms of, first of all, putting kilayim on them, or maybe putting on a beg with arba kanfot that doesn't have tzitzit on it. All those could be done to a mate, because a mate is chofshim in a mitzvot. That's one aspect. But on the other side, or mitigating that, we also have, that is quoted by the Gemara in numerous places, including in Brachot, Tzachim, Baba Batra, Avodah Zorah, Menachot. The Gemara there deals with something called, Loeg Darosh, Cherif Maseu. That you can't make fun of a poor person, because that is a blasphemy to the one who created him. If you make fun of somebody who's poor, then you're really making fun of Hashem, because that is Hashem's creation. The Gemara takes that in reference to the Meitim to say that if you perform mitzvot in proximity to a mate, then that's like making fun of the Meitim because you can perform mitzvot and they cannot perform mitzvot. So if you perform mitzvah and they're dalet amot, in a sense, you're making fun of the Meitim because they can't perform mitzvot. So now, how do we balance between these two tensions, one of which is that Meitim are chufshim in a mitzvot? On the other hand, there's this problem of Loeg Larosh. So the Balei HaTosafot raised that issue, and it actually then parlays into practices that we have today, and gives a lot of information about it. It's an amazing Tosafot. He discusses this a number of places in Shas, and the Tosafot Arosh as well over here discusses the same issue. And he says, Vim Tomar, how can you bury the mate in Kilayim? Loeg Larosh, Shema Bishoba Davar Asur. Okay, he's not Chayav in Mitzvot, but it's still making fun of him that he's not chayav in mitzvot when you put him into a beged kilayim. Umarei lo shein lo od chilek b'mitzvot. That's the best demonstration, the fact that this person is no longer chayav in mitzvot, is putting him into kilayim. That's as if you're making fun of him. Uperish Rashbam. Here's the first answer that we have in the Baal Tosafot. Rashbam suggests, Ein bo isur. Bafilo lechai, ki agavno. There's no isur over here for such an individual. Even for someone who was alive, it wouldn't be a problem. Shein a mate, nenebo. Because a mate doesn't get any hand off from the clothing. In order to be chayav for the violation of the mitzvah of kilayim, you need to get hanat halbasha. If you're wearing it in a way that gives you hana'ah, a dead person doesn't get hana'ah. So by definition, they can't be in violation of kilayim. The same way that if a person's alive had something on them that didn't give them hana'ah, then they also wouldn't be in violation of kilayim. I mean, Tosafot dismisses that view of the Rashbam. It's a nice explanation over here. But kasha, to be tzitzit nami. Also by tzitzit, then you would not be chayav in tzitzit, because if there's no hanat levisha, there's no chiyuv tzitzit. There is this correlation or parallel between kilayim and tzitzit. And if you're not chayav in kilayim, you're also most likely not chayav in tzitzit. And the problem is that we know that the meitim, or at least the practice was to bury the meitim with tzitzit. And if that's the case, why would you put tzitzit on the beged if the beged is not really chayav in tzitzit? So that is Tosafot's rejection of the Rashbam's position. And then his younger brother, the Rabbeinu Tam, makes a different suggestion, which is, Mefereish Rabbeinu Tam, the Davka Shayach Loig Darosh B'Tzitzit. Loig Darosh is a very narrow scope that only relates to Tzitzit. Mishum Deshkula Keneged Kol HaMitzvot. Because it's equal to all of the other mitzvot. Uzechartem in Kol Mitzvot Hashem. That's said by Tzitzit. And we know the Gematria that Rashi brings in the Gemara Menachot, where the Gemara says that Tzitzit is Keneged Kol HaTorah Kula. That's because of the fact that Tzitzit represents all the mitzvot, or is a reminder for all the mitzvot. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is that Tzitzit carried a much bigger message with them that is too much to put before the mate, because if you wear Tzitzit in front of the mate, you're basically saying, ha-ha, you're not chayav in any mitzvot. Any one particular mitzvah is not so offensive. But bringing the tzitzit to the mate is extremely offensive, because that's showing him that he has no shaykhut to the mitzvot. And Loi Garosh, therefore, going to the Rabbeinu Tam, only has application by issues of tzitzit, not broader application. This is not accepted by everybody. There are many Rishonim that disagree with this view of the Rabbeinu Tam. Others believe that it's true by Limud HaTorah as well, that you're not allowed to learn within Davod Amot Tovei mate. You're not allowed to daven within Davod Amot Tovei mate. You're not allowed to perform mitzvot within Davod Amot Tovei mate. You could argue that things like davening and the Talmud Torah carry, again, bigger weight like that of tzitzit, but many Rishonim do not see this limitation of the Rabbeinu Tam applying. The Rambam is the most interesting of the Rishonim with regards to this, because Loig Darosh assumes that the meitim have the capacity to know what's going on around them. And if you're a rationalist, that's very hard. For the Rambam, he can't accept the fact that the meitim are talking, that they understand, they're aware. That's something that the Rambam doesn't accept. But the Rambam has to paskin the halacha, because the Gemara in Brachot brings the din of Loeg Darosh, came from Maseu down. What you see the Rambam do, my brother-in-law pointed out to me once, is that the Rambam does not paskin ever Loeg Darosh. That the restriction against doing these items is a problem of making fun of the meitim. Rather, he says that it's a place that's inappropriate. So for this life, you're not allowed to daven in a bathroom. You're not allowed to learn Torah in a bathroom. The Rambam says the same thing with regards to within Dalet Amot of a mate. You're not allowed to learn because it's as if you are davening or learning inside of the bathroom. It's an inappropriate place for davening and learning. That's how the Rambam explains the din. The Ravid on the spot says to him, what are you talking about? It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Loeg Darosh, Cheref Maseu. And it actually turns out to be a nafkamina between them. Because according to the Rambam, if you daven in that location, you didn't daven. Because you daven in a location that's not acceptable for davening, it's like ois davening, and you have to daven again. Whereas for the Raibud, you're just in violation of Loeg Darosh, Cheref Maseu. You davened, but you did an Aveira when you davened. It's still davening. It's just a davening that comes packaged with the wrong thing that you did. And so there's also a nafkamina on how you express it. But then the Tosafot then parlays into the issue of what about the fact that we bury the meitim with tzitzit. Even though we bury the meitim with tzitzit on, and so then it's not really making fun of them because they were in tzitzit also. Nevertheless, when you wear tzitzit in front of them, even though they have tzitzit on, it's still making fun of them Because even though they're wearing tzitzit, they're not getting the mitzvah of tzitzit, and you are getting the mitzvah of tzitzit. And again, the tzitzit carry with them this additional side to them that it's connected kol mitzvot, and therefore it's something that is considered to be inappropriate or poking fun at the mate. And therefore, we won't allow you to wear tzitzit within dalad amot of the mate. And then Tosafot then raises question with regards to our practice today. Today we put them in a talit and then we take off the tzitzit. We don't bury them in tzitzit. How do we do that? Or why do we do that? Doesn't the Gemara in Menachot says the Katchila that you're supposed to put tzitzit in big day mitim because of loig l'rosh? We don't put them in a beged of dalit kanfot that doesn't have tzitzit because that's like making fun of them that they can't keep the mitzvah. How do we bury the mitim in a talit that doesn't have tzitzit? And today our practice is to put the tzitzit in, and then they're posel the tzitzit. They cut one of the corners and are posel the tzitzit, at least in the Chutz Laaretz. Some places in Eretz Yisrael they posel the tzitzit. Some places they do not posel the tzitzit in Eretz Yisrael. But Tosafot wants to know, why is it our practice that we don't put tzitzit in the big day of Meitim? So Tosafot says over here, says, Aval min hagenu yesh litmoa, yikoach hayit d'chelet, that Gemara Menachot makes it very questionable, our practice. Says, V'omeri, tibimei chachamim, the time the chachamim, shikulam lo shim tzitzit, everybody wore tzitzit. They all had big day dalet kanfot, they all wore tzitzit. So then, it made sense to bury them in tzitzit, and it would have been making fun of them, had you put a four-cornered beggar on them without tzitzit, it would have been poking fun of them, because they wore tzitzit their whole life, and now you're putting a four-cornered beggar on them, and they're not wearing tzitzit. But today, that we don't wear tzitzit, or some people don't wear tzitzit at all during their lifetime, if you put tzitzit on them in their death, that's more making fun of them than not putting on tzitzit. The guy didn't wear tzitzit his whole life. Then you're going to bury him in tzitzit? That's making fun of him that he didn't do the mitzvah his whole life. So better to put him in dalet kanfot without tzitzit, because that's what he did his whole life anyway. He wasn't wearing tzitzit, and now he shouldn't wear tzitzit as well. Now, if you want to say, let's differentiate, and we'll put tzitzit on the people who wore tzitzit in their lifetime, and we'll take the tzitzit off those that didn't wear tzitzit in their lifetime, that creates differentiation in the Meitim. And we know from the Gemara that the Chachamim were very makpid on this idea of creating no differentiation in the Meitim. Because that, first of all, embarrasses the mate, but also this idea or concept that once you die, everyone is equal. Everyone's in the same place. Everyone's facing their creator, and everybody is Altira Kiyashirish. Because in the end, he's not taking in his death. So they made it that, first of all, there'd be no differentiation in the Bigadim, the clothing that the people wear when they're dead, the Tachachim will all be the same. So there'll no difference between those that were rich and those that were poor. All burials would be the same. So there'd be no difference between the rich and the poor. And also the poor wouldn't run away because of the cost of the funerals. And there'll be no differentiation so that the Meitim themselves are not embarrassed, or those that are the Avelim will be embarrassed. That's true by the problems of Nida, the story about Rabbi Gamliel, who has to be buried in plain Tachrichim to take away the stigma of being buried in plain Tachrichim so that everybody would do it. And similarly over here, the Baal HaTosfot would say, you can't differentiate between some people having tzitzit and other people not having tzitzit, and therefore we bury everybody without tzitzit, even though there are some people that keep the mitzvah of tzitzit. Then he brings another smach to our minog, which is a gemara in Masechet Smachot, which is one of the Masechtot HaChitzoniot. It's one of the outside Masechtot that wasn't part of the gemara, but he points out that we do follow many times, and Tosfot HaRosh actually spends more time on that. There are many times where our practices follow Masechet Kala, Masechet Derech Eretz, even though it's against the Babli or against the gemara. We nevertheless have practices like that. Though in the footnote below, he notes that the Ramban in the Milchomot quotes at the end of Moed Katan that Masechet Smachot that has this practice of Abba Shaul said, don't bury me in my tzitzit. He says the Chachamim disagree. So first of all, the Ramban brings that the majority disagree with Abba Shaul. And number two is, it brings over there the reason that Abba Shaul didn't want to be buried in tzitzit is because he thinks tzitzit had kedusha. He thought it was inappropriate because it was a davar shebikdusha that shouldn't be buried with them. But we don't hold that tzitzit or a davar shebikdusha, and therefore the statement of Abba Shaul in Masechet Kala should not be a source for us or our practice, because first of all, the Chachamim disagree, and second of all, his reasoning was particular to his position with regards to tzitzit, which we don't hold of, which is that tzitzit had a davar shemikdusha. The Tosfot HaRosh, in addition, adds on another factor, which is the fact that he says, in their day, in the time of the Chachamim, the reason that if it didn't wear tzitzit, it was a serious violation, was because everybody was wearing four-cornered begadim. And since everybody wore four-cornered begadim, then everybody wore tzitzit, and then it made sense to bury everybody in tzitzit, because that was what everyone was doing during their lifetime. The Gemara there in Menachot says, you can be poter yourself from tzitzit by rounding out the corners, by wearing clothing that's not chayav in tzitzit. And there is an incident there in the Gemara in Menachot, where Rav Katina asks the Malach if it's a problem not to wear tzitzit. And the Malach answers him, "Idna deritcha." The time when a God gets angry, he punishes for people who escape the assay of tzitzit. So then, that's the reason actually today that we are mechayev ourselves in tzitzit, and we wear a big day arba kanfot to be mechayev ourselves in tzitzit, because there's a positive commandment, there's a mitzvah assay to wear tzitzit, and b'shat iritcha, then Hashem gets angry even if we just avoid assays. The Tosfot HaRosh dismisses that as a problem or as an issue today, because he says that that din that Rav Katina has with the Malach is only true in their day, where everybody wore arba kanfot, and that someone who was escaping wearing arba kanfot was actually going out of his way to be patur in tzitzit. Today, where we don't wear arba kanfot, then not wearing them is not a big deal. And if you don't wear arba kanfot or never wearing tzitzit, that's not a problem, because nobody's wearing arba kanfot. People who wear arba kanfot are intentionally wearing a bag that nobody else wears in order to be chayav in tzitzit. Therefore, he doesn't see it as being a deficit that somebody didn't wear tzitzit in their lifetime. And from that, he dismisses this idea of the reed that it would be problematic to bury somebody in tzitzit if they never wore tzitzit during their lifetime. It's just not true. People aren't wearing tzitzit in their lifetime because they're not chayav in tzitzit. They never wear a beged of dalet kanfot. So the Tosfot HaRosh somewhat waters down this idea of the Balei HaTosafot as to why we don't wear them. And then after he says all this, the Tosfot HaRosh still then goes back and says, "Umikom makom, nachon lechol yirei shamayim liknot talit bat dalet kanfot, lechayim et zmo b'tzitzit." It's still proper for someone to buy a beged of four kanfot and wear tzitzit, shehi mitzvah gedola v'chashuva, because it's a great mitzvah. And then he quotes at the end, the Sfarim Achitzonim, like the Masechet Smachot, which is what the Tosfot relied on in the end, and he quotes that as the source for this practice as well, of burying without tzitzit, or being passeling the tzitzit when a person is buried. But he does indicate, and the Balei Tosfot are also indicating, something that the Ibn Ezra also points out, which was that there was a huge laxity with regards to the performance of the mitzvah of tzitzit and tefillin in the time of the Rishonim. There is a transition stage from the point where people wore arba kanfot as regular begadim to the point where they're not wearing them anymore. And there's a transition from where people were wearing tefillin all day to the point where they don't have a guf naki and they stop wearing tefillin altogether. And the Rishonim are pointing out this idea or this problem, which is nobody's wearing tzitzit anymore or talit anymore, and nobody's wearing tefillin. That they try to fight by changing when we wear tefillin. Instead of wearing tefillin all day, the practice to wear tefillin just during davening came about in order to facilitate people's ability to wear tefillin and still have a guf naki and be able to manage the problem of proper machshava, proper conduct in tefillin for a short period of time. Because otherwise it was too much of a burden and people could not hold the standard of being guf naki and machshavot teorot all day, and therefore they weren't wearing tefillin at all. The same thing with tzitzit. The Ibn Ezra says that people should put on a talit to daven. They should put on a arba kanfot to daven at least, so at least they perform the mitzvah of tzitzit, even though they don't wear dalet kanfot all the time in terms of their clothing, as well as the fact that we don't have dalet kanfot. So again, it's a nice idea to be mechayiv yourself in tzitzit, to wear the tzitzit, but obviously they're fighting a problem where the mitzvah of tzitzit and tefillin are disappearing completely, and therefore they're discussing this issue. Again, with regards to Tachrichim HaMeit, it's very interesting. Again, the different practices as to whether to passel the tzitzit before they bury the individual or whether that they bury them in tzitzit has to do with different minhagim with regards to the Chevrot Kedishot. But here you see the Tosfot trying to deal with their practice of not burying people in arba kanfot without tzitzit. Amar Avraham Bar Papa Rav Chista, Beged Shavad Bo Kilayim. If you have a beged where kilayim was lost in it, Sovo Umutar, you dye it, and then it's mutar. So as Rashi explains over here, the reason that you dye it is because dye takes differently to wool than it does to linen. And therefore, you would be able to identify the linen inside of the beged once you've dyed it. When you dye it, the wool's color will take much more strongly, will fix better than that of the pishtan, that of the linen. And so therefore, you'll be able to identify where that piece of linen is inside of this beged. The Baal Tosfot asks, why do we need all this testing? Why do we need to find it? Why don't we just say it's batel berov? Here you have a whole beged of tzemer and one little string of pishtan. Why isn't that enough in order to be mevatel it? The Tosfot over here says that you can't apply bitul when each of the items is independently mutar. Bitul applies when there's an isur and heter, when there, what the Ran calls opposites involved, then you can talk about bitul. When you have two items that are independently mutar, then you can't have them be mevatel each other in that situation. And that's what he says here. Yishlamar, galo shayach bitul barov, elok shay isur mi'urav beheter. That's only when you have isur and heter. Val kilayim sheshneim heter. Like kilayim where they're both heter, nesrim ayidei tarovet. And they only become asur when they're together, then it doesn't matter whether there's a lot of one or a little of the other. There's no bitul over here because they independently, they exist without any problem. It's only the combination of them that makes them asur. And the Hagot Meronchenberg points you to the Tosfot in Chulin. Tosfot in Gemara Avodah Zarah, they ask, then what about Basar B'Chalav? How is Basar B'Chalav Batel if the two items independently are mutar, and it's only the Tarovet that makes them asurim? How can you ever have bitul there? So there the Baal Tosfot in Avodah Zarah answer that Basar B'Chalav is an exception to the rule because there the Torah makes it that bitul works. Because the Isur Basar B'Chalav is no tein tam. And there by definition, if there is no tein tam, then there is no Basar B'Chalav. And that's why bitul works by Basar B'Chalav, even though it shouldn't based on the principles established here by the Baal Tosafot. Or the way that the Baal Tosafot expressed it is that Derech Bishul Asra Torah. The Torah only answered it in a manner of Bishul, which means that it's only in a mechanism of Nutinat Tam. Although they also then give another possibility as to why there's no bitul berov by shatneis is because the item is independently significant, and therefore there's no bitul, which is not true by the case of basar b'chalav. So now the Gemara says, Zamalei Rovo, the Rafram Bar Papa, Menalei the Sabaha. How do you know that this works? How does Rafram Bar Papa know that this is a good way to check? Amalei Matzitani says it's a Mishnah. It's not Butek, Adshem Megiyah L'Sela. That when it comes to checking for the tum'ah in the piles, the Chachamim said over there, you check until you reach bedrock or until you reach virgin earth. V'ilaka. If it's not there, Emar Orev Natla. So then if it's not there, then we assume that a raven took it away and you don't have to worry about it. Hachanami. Imra v'kitna v'hadadadeh lo solik lo tziva. When you have linen and wool together, the dye doesn't take well in the area where one of them is linen and one of them is wool. I mean, that there's an identifiable difference in the taking of the dye. Came into Lodia, if you don't find a differentiation, then Amar Mintar Natar, then we assume that it slipped out or it fell out, that string fell out. So you can do the check. If the check identifies it, then you know where it is. The check doesn't identify any difference in the coloring, then we assume that that piece of linen already fell away. Amar Abacha Breit Rav Yeva Mishmei Demar Sutra. Haiman derami chuta de kitna biglime de imra. Person who puts a string of linen inside of a cloak that was made out of wool. Vinitke velo yada I notik ilo notik. And then he pulled it out and he's not sure if he got it out fully or he didn't get it out fully. Shapir dami. He doesn't have to worry about it. My taima. What's the reason you don't have to worry about it? Idoraita shatnez kediv. When it comes to the Torah prohibition of kilayim, of shatneis, it says shatneis, which is Ad Yeshua Teviv Noz. The Chachamim look at that as an acronym for the following processes, which are Shua, Tevi, and Noz. Rabbanan Ud, the Gazrube. And over here, it's only a rabbinic problem. The Kevin de lo Yoda, Intake Shari. Says he no longer knows whether he got it out completely or whether it tore and it still remains in there, it's mutar because it's a suffix midrabanan. Rashi over here suggests that shua, tevi, and noz are the processes in making the wool and the linen. And he says that shua is like chaluk, is very smooth, which means bimasrek. It's the combing of the wool or the combing of the linen. Tevi is yachad. is putting them together. That's twining them together. Twining them or putting them together. Nose is ariga, is the weaving of them together. So Rashi explains that the process of nose, ariga, is the final part of the process, and that is asur midoraita. If you comb them together, if you were tovea them together, you spun them together, and then you wove them together. Rabbanan hu, the gozer baruch below shuva v'tovi. And if you didn't do that, the two earlier processes together, and you only wove them together, that's only an isur midrabanan. So Rashi says that nose is ariga, and therefore ariga without shuva v'tovi done together is not considered to be midoraita, and therefore you're only dealing with an issue derabanan over here because they didn't comb and they didn't spin the linen and wool together. They only wove them together. It's the only thing with the nisu derabanan, and therefore we can be mekil. That's the view of Rashi. The Ramban ala Torah and the Tosfot over here disagree with Rashi and say Rashi explained shuva v'tovi v'nos incorrectly, and you can see that in the Pali Tosfot here. He says that if that's the case, then you'll never have kilayim b'tzitzit, because you never do shuva v'tovi and ariga with regards to the kilayim b'tzitzit, because there's no ariga. You put tzitzit, tie them, knot them, onto the tzitzit. There's no ariga. And if that's the case, you never have a din d'oraita of tzitzit, and then why does the Torah have to say you're allowed to have kilayim in tzitzit? So Tosafot says, Rashi's got the wrong explanation of shuva v'tovi, he knows. He says, heyach yeshuva v'tovi kilayim below nose, shariga hi achibur. Vote, how could it be that shuva v'tovi independently should be a problem? And the Gemara now here continues and says, Amar Ravashi, Amar Imar Oshua, Otevi, Onos. Who says that you have to need all three of them? Maybe if you have one of the three, it should be enough to make you Chayav. And tell us what it says, according to Rashi, how could that be? Without Ariga, how could you be Chayav, Shua and Tevi, without any nose, without Ariga? So then what does that have to do with Kilayim? It doesn't make any sense. Behold, Belomali Kra, the nose, the Ariga, why do you need nose to teach me a weaving? The pasuk says yachdav. Yachdav means together. And that's how we know that they have to be woven together. You don't need that from the word nose. So then he says, Mefresh Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, Midoraita, Shatnez Ktiv, Achia Shua Tevi Binoz, and explains it this. Shua, Kol Echad Levado, V'cheinami Tevi, V'cheinami Noz Levado. All three processes are done independently. And then you bring them together in the end because it says yachdav. So now he has to then explain nose as not being weaving but something else. He says nose, perish nose, shazur. It is twined together. So now you have shua tevi, and nose is the combing, which is done independently. The nose, which is done independently, the spinning of them. The twining of them, which is done independently. And then they're joined together in yachdav, that's when they're woven together. The strings to make you chayav and shatnez have to have undergone the process of shua, tevi, and nose, not together, but independently. Rashi says it all has to be done together, which is a crazy way. You can almost never be chayav in shatnez. But here, what they're saying is you need to go through all three of these processes of combing, spinning, and twining in order for it to be a string that can create shatnez. Then when you weave those strings that were done like that for wool and independently done like that for linen, then they create shatnez. And that's the requirement over here, and that's the explanation of the Gemara over here. And that's why you can have kilayim b'tzitzit, because you don't need the ariga. You just need them to be yachdav. You need to be them attached. You need them to be connected. That's number one. Number two is that explains the shita of Ravashi over here, where you can have oshua, otevi, onos. Each one can be independently a violation, maybe you don't need all three of them. And then according to the Tosafot, the failure over here was that they were not nosed. They were not twined. Since they weren't twined independently, they don't have a din of kilayim because you haven't gone through all the processes that get you to the point where you have kilayim d'oraita, and that's why you only have kilayim d'rabbanan over here. The Gemara answers, v'hilchata gemar zutra, the halacha is like mar zutra, midafkinu rachmana b'chad al-mishna. That the halacha is like Bar Zutra, that you have to be in violation of all three of them to be chayav in kilayim, not just one of them. Not like Ravashi, because the Torah calls it shatnez in one word. So that makes it sound like you need all of them to be in violation. Tanu Rabbanan, beged savua mitamei mishum ketem. If you have a beged that is colored, and then there's a stain, possibly a menstrual stain on it, there is a din of ketem, and it is mitamei the woman. There is no din of ketem on colored bigadim. Shalo hu tru bigdei tzimonim lisha ela lehakel al kitmehem. Because the only reason they allowed women to wear colored clothing was for exactly this reason, in order to be makil if they get a stain on a colored clothing. There, Mayar says, hu tru, if you're saying they're mutar, michal da sire, that there was a point when we thought they were asurim, why should colored clothing be asur? Mayar says, eh, yes, they were asur. It's not. The pulmos shall aspanios, in the battles or the conquests of Vespasian, gazru al tarot chatanim, valeirus. At that point, because of the destruction that was wrought on Bnei Israel that led to the Churban HaBayit, that destruction, in that point in time, they said no longer can chatanim wear crowns at their wedding, and irus cannot be worn anymore. The Gemara Sota tells us that it is a bell or something that they use, a musical instrument that they used at the time of the wedding. They dismissed that because they had to lower the level of simcha at the weddings because of the Churban HaBayit. Bikshul Igzora Bigdei Tzibnonim. They wanted to not only do it with these items, but also eliminate colored clothing because of the Amelut. Colored clothing was too happy, too much simcha in the face of Churban HaBayit. Amrei Ha'adifak De La'akel HaKitmeem. They said better to be Asr the Atarot Katanim and the Irus rather than the Bigdei Tzibonim, because we need the Bigdei Tzibonim in order to be Mekiel by Kitamim. And so what you see here, and this is the way we paskin, as Rav Nathan Ben Yosef says, is that a ketem on colored clothing does not have the gzera or takanak derabanan that makes the woman tmeya. And therefore a ketem on color is not considered to be a ketem. Just like Rav Nechemiah said, a ketem on something that's not mekabel tuma is not a ketem. So to a ketem on a colored clothing is not considered a ketem because it doesn't show the color clearly. Therefore you can't determine that it's really dam or menstrual dam because you can never determine the proper coloration because it's not on white. That's why women who are not during their shivanikim are advised to wear colored clothing or colored items in order to protect against them having problems of tamim. And they even have special pads or liners that are made in color instead of white in order to facilitate this kula of halacha midrabanan, that these tamim that come on those objects are not considered to be tamim. Okay, we'll stop here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Samach Aleph Amud Bet.